Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alonzarek Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, first round picks last year. Jose Abreu, Andrew McCutchen, second round, maybe third round for Jose Abreu. Bottom line, they were bad. They were bad for fantasy owners. What happened to these guys? We're talking about 2016 busts. And we have some emails from Braves fans. They exist. Hooray! Welcome to the
show.
There are two.
The whole Southeast.
Well, let's see how many there are.
And probably some nationally, because every game was televised nationally during the best part of, you know, when they were great.
Okay, we got two emails last week from Braves fans, Scott.
I was watching for them, too. We got two out of what? We have like 6 million listeners?
Not
right now.
We definitely don't have 6 million.
It's around there.
That would be great. I would be putting an addition on my condo or something.
Maybe
like that.
Maybe buy an extra sweatshirt.
Which I don't own. I'd buy another sweatshirt. Exactly. Cause that's all I wear for 6 months. So anyway, we're talking about busts. We're reading some emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Kyle Schwarber is on the Cubs World Series roster. That's pretty cool. So we'll talk about him going into next year. Important question. What are you guys going to dress your kids up as for Halloween?
Oh, this is an important question. Yeah. I've got 3 kids. One of them is...
it's probably only one that you really have much input with.
One is going as Steph Curry.
Oh, cool.
And thankfully, he already had Steph Curry shoes and a Steph Curry jersey, so I got off cheap on that one.
Well, that, for now, you got off cheap when you had to buy the shoes and the jersey.
Right. My older son is going as Jason Williams, the former Miami Heat basketball player.
Oh, my God. Hoops House.
He is wearing a Hershey's t-shirt and basketball shorts because he's white chocolate.
White chocolate.
And then my daughter is going as a pineapple.
How old is your daughter?
It's like 17.
Oh, okay.
She's just like, what's the easiest thing? I could draw some lines on a yellow shirt and say I dressed up.
Very cool. She needs like a SpongeBob to go along
with
her.
She's like, I don't want to be in dress code, so how can I wear a costume?
Well, Scott, do you have anything you're putting your, what is he, 2 years old?
Yeah, he's two. Well, not quite, almost. And he's going as a train engineer.
A train engineer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Got the little hats.
Yeah.
Some overalls. Adorable.
Yeah. That'll be great. This is probably your last good year of Halloween for like 10. So enjoy it.
Why?
Because he doesn't have to walk his son around to trick or treat.
You don't enjoy that?
It's probably not bad down here in the Midwest or the Northeast where like every year on Halloween it's 45 degrees and raining. It's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And it's still not that fun.
I was going to say, I kind of miss it. Actually, I'll just end this discussion. I wanted to. Okay. So I live in Sleepy Hollow, New York.
Right.
Which is very popular in October. Like for whatever, it's a very small town. There are, I don't know, 5 restaurants that I can think of off the top of my head in Sleepy Hollow, but they're all pretty crowded this time of year, it seems. And,
you live in an apartment.
Townhouse.
And there's 5 different restaurants where you live.
My town.
Yeah, you're
in Sleepy Hollow.
It's not a very small town then.
There's one street with restaurants on it.
Okay, what are there, 40,000, 50,000 people?
No, I would say probably like 7,000 to 10,000.
Oh, wow, that's you just got a lot of good selection of restaurants then.
5 restaurants?
For a 5,000, 10,000 people? Yes.
They're actually more than that. Well, Westchester's weird. Like, I mean, I'd go to the Tarrytown restaurants right next. There's like village after village after village, basically.
Right. In 2010, there were 9,870 people that lived there.
So that's a lot. Five restaurants. There are more than that, but not that many.
Yeah. I think that's a lot. Yeah. I come from a place of about 9,000-10,000 people.
Leave it to Heath to hang up the story, arguing a technicality.
Well, yeah, there's
no Heath.
I'm just surprised you really do live in a small town.
Yeah, I do. I do. I like it.
Wait. Mount Pleasant this says that Sleepy Hollow is a village.
It's a village.
Inside of a town.
Another technicality.
It's not actually even a town.
I mean, it's pretty much a town, but anyway, we have cool Halloween stuff going on. I think it's mostly for kids, but there's something called the Great Jack-O-Lantern Blaze, which has over 7,000 hand-carved illuminated pumpkins set against the mysterious backdrop of Van Cortlandt Manor's 18th century building. I don't know, whatever that means. But I think I might go to the Jack-O-Lantern Blaze and see 7,000 hand-carved illuminated pumpkins on Friday night.
Those are my favorite kind of pumpkins.
Cool.
Do not dress up as a clown.
I won't. You're more than welcome to come, Sky. All right, let's read some Braves fan emails. This is from Mark. The subject, Go Braves. And the question, better career to this point, Dansby Swanson or Derek Jeter? Also, if you could expound upon why Dansby Swanson is the correct answer, I would appreciate it.
What?
Yeah.
This is a little too much of a Braves fan.
I don't think he's kidding, but
I think he's calling you a homer.
No, I don't think so at all, Heath. I think he's just kidding.
Oh, okay. Like Dansby Swanson would be much better than Derek Jeter, I think. Now Jeter's old.
Yeah, now yes. All right, you want a real email from a Braves fan?
Sure.
Dear John, and if he is on the podcast, John.
Sounds like the Braves front office.
Okay.
The three Johns.
First of all, I think Heath is just bitter towards Braves fans because he still wakes up every morning and remembers when John Schierholz left his beloved Royals and won 14 consecutive division titles, signed and traded for three Hall of Fame pitchers, one Hall of Fame manager, and another potential first ballot Hall of Fame third baseman. And it doesn't help that every former Brave that has played for Kansas City has gone on to play a subpar level, like Chris Medlin, Mike Minor, Peter Moylan, Jeff Francoeur, Johnny Gomes, Gregor Blanco, Omar Infante, and the list goes on and on. I'll give him Melky Cabrera because I like Heath and I like his sarcastic and comedic opinions he brings to the podcast. Even though the Royals will eventually lose everyone and go back to where they were before 2014, Heath's the man, and obviously Scott is my guy too. Oh, geez, thanks, Jesse. Appreciate your love for me.
Jesse's a nice guy.
Jesse's question. Are you expecting Freddie Freeman to regress in 2017 after his MVP-like year in 2016? Also, Scott, do you have any bold predictions for the offseason regarding the Braves?
I like to imagine. I like to fantasize about what the Braves could do with their offseason, sure. I'd like to see them make a hard run at Justin Turner. I'd like to see that.
All right.
Tell them how
good he is in points leagues.
He's probably even better than in real life, actually.
Yeah.
Than he is in fantasy. So.
Oh, even in real life, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we're just going to trade Mike Moustakas to you for like two or three of your best prospects. We'll be set.
I don't think that's how trades between the Braves and the Royals work.
I just want to mention to Jesse, Jermaine Dye and Paul Bird. Been a couple great former Braves for the Royals.
And I also wanted to point out that Jeff Francoeur, I think, had the best year of his career with the Royals.
Which isn't saying a lot.
No. But, and I also don't, you know, if I could nitpick the email from the Braves fan, I don't think John Schierholz gets any credit for Smoltz or Glavin other than extending their contracts. Bobby Cox is the GM traded for Smoltz, and I'm not sure who drafted Glavin, but it was before Schierholz's time. So, of course, Schierholz signed Maddox as a free agent before the 93 season and gets all the credit in the world for that. But
I like it.
Yeah.
I like that. That's good stuff. I like learning things like that. Freddie Freeman.
Oh, yeah, Freddie Freeman. you know, I kind of feel like it depends how much you buy the power breakout. And I'm in between on that. I'm ranking him cautiously, I guess, if that says anything. Where, you know, for half the season he performed about on the level of the Anthony Rizzos of the world, but I'm still ranking him closer to like Will Myers territory. So I do think he's always been a guy who's consistently hit for a high average. You know, BABIP hasn't really been something you have to worry about with him because he is the best line drive hitter, I think, in all of baseball. His line drive percentage keeps his BABIP high, which keeps his batting average high. So that part I mostly buy. But the power was something new at an age that makes sense, but I'm not ready to go all in just yet.
And I would just like to say that Jeff Francoeur did have his best offensive season with the Royals ever. His defensive war was terrible, so his best season ever was still with the Braves.
Okay.
But yes, his best offensive season ever did come in Kansas City.
And I would like to say that the power wasn't completely out of nowhere if you look at Freeman, because he had more power in 2015 than ever before, really. 18 home runs in 118 games, and he had never hit more than 23 home runs in a season. So he hit like 23 home runs in 147 games in 2012 and 2013, 18 home runs in a full season in 2014, and then 18 home runs in 2015, and again, only 118 games. So, yeah, I mean, now he's 27 years old. At age 26, at age 25, he had a little power breakout. Age 26, big time, 34 home runs in 158. But well, I don't know the math off the top of my head, but I'm guessing he was on pace. He was definitely on pace for a career high in 2015.
Well, I can tell you the ISO difference. Last year, 2015, 195 was his ISO, which was pretty close to the previous 2 years. 2016, 267.
So yeah, his career is 196, so 2015 was pretty close to normal. I think it was just more doubles turned into home runs.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Freeman is your what ranking at first base?
I think seventh. I'd have to pull it up to say for sure, and my internet is stalling on me.
I
think it's about seventh.
Freeman is ninth for Heath and eighth for Scott.
There you go.
Right around Matt Carpenter. And Freeman is one spot behind Chris Davis for Heath, who was, and I asked both of you for four busts from 2016. Mm-hmm. And not like, I just to get eight names. You don't have to necessarily associate these guys with any analyst, but Davis was one that you provided, Heath, and I am a little surprised that you have him over Freddie Freeman. I'm even looking at head-to-head points, so, I mean, Roto would be a little more understandable, but, yeah, Chris Davis was a disappointment, no doubt.
He was a disappointment, and Chris Towers actually, I don't think it was a joke, but just made the statement earlier that there's only two types of seasons that Chris Davis can have. And he had the other one this time. And I don't know if that's completely fair. The BABIP, unlike Freddie Freeman, is something you have to worry about. And when it's way down, like it was last year, like it was in 2014, then he has a tough time hitting over 250. And that drives everything else down. It's going to drive his run production down. He still hit 38 home runs. He still almost scored 100 runs. If he has, and you look at it for his career, it's a 250 BABIP. If he has a 250, 260 BABIP, continues to walk 13% of the time, he's going to have better numbers.
You have him fifth in Roto at first
right. Base
going into
next
year.
What was he, third 2 years ago?
Yeah, this past year, I don't know what he was that.
2015, we're talking?
Yeah, 2015, I'm not sure. But that makes sense. He had 262 with 47 home runs. Last year, Davis, I didn't write it down, I'm sorry.
221 with 38 home runs.
No, I was looking for where he finished at
the biggest drop-off he had, I'm sure he finished closer to 12th than he did to 3rd, probably in the 12 to 15 range. The biggest drop-off he had, though, was RBI, where he had 84, and he's been a consistent, well, I can't say consistent because it's Chris Davis, but he's had 138, 117 in his two full seasons before that. I don't think that's necessarily his fault. I would expect his RBI total rebound.
He was 20th in Roto last year.
That's ridiculous.
And yeah, around there in points leagues too. So yes, Scott, you're obviously not as high on Chris Davis. In Rotisserie, you have him 11th. I think you have him 11th in both.
Yeah, and this was kind of what I worried about with Chris Davis coming into this year. I know I wasn't as high on him to begin with.
Right.
Obviously, he was still a bust from where I had him ranked, but my ranking was guarding against the season of him hitting 220 because it's a radical strikeout rate. But what I didn't account for, what Heath didn't account for, and what Heath may not be accounting for now is just how much the landscape has changed from the Chris Davis we saw in 2015, because you inject that Chris Davis, the right. one with the decent batting average and 40 whatever home runs into this year's first base pool. And he's finishing in points leagues. He's between Daniel Murphy and Carlos Santana. That puts him 10th, I think.
Really?
2015 Chris Davis in 2016's wow. first base rankings is 10th.
In fantasy points per game?
No, in overall points.
Okay.
And well, points
and
is
it'd probably
worst
be
format.
Higher than Roto. It'd probably be higher in Roto.
Yeah, it would be.
There's not a number where you can make that same comparison.
Right.
So it'd be hard to figure out.
Now, he was the third. He was the fifth best. Okay, let's put it like this. For Chris Davis, 528 fantasy points in 2015 with a .262 batting average and 47 home runs. That made him the number five first baseman in points leagues in 2015. Scott, you're saying that those 528 fantasy points would have made him... Yeah, would have made him 10th? 4, 5, 6, 7...
Ninth,
right.
Yeah.
Right behind Daniel Murphy. Again, as you said, and in between Murphy and Santana.
And that's what I'm thinking is best-case scenario, Chris Davis, right? I mean, you don't...
I don't know that that's a... You're guaranteed that first base is going to be as good this year. If 528 points finish 5th in one year and 9th in the other, I don't know why we would assume it would finish 9th the next year.
That's... I guess we can't assume that, but looking at the 8 first basemen ahead of them, like I buy all of what they did. I think there are questions about Freddie Freeman. There are questions about Daniel Murphy, but then the others are the same that we always see up there every year.
They just scored more points than they had the year before.
Well, yeah, some of them did. And that's because, I mean, offense around the league was better this year. So I'm saying there's a lower margin for error now, and Chris Davis always has the built-in error of the strikeouts.
That's true. In points, I've probably got him too high. I don't think that there's just a new reality in first base and in baseball that last year changed that much and will definitely carry over to this year.
It's a two-year trend, though, of more home runs, right?
Right, yeah. But with 2015 numbers, he was a top five first baseman.
That was a heck of a year, though. That was his best year ever, right? 47 home. Well, no, because I guess two years ago.
He had the crazy
286, 53 home. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, he's got so much upside, but ranking him fifth ahead of a guy like Edwin Encarnacion.
I think there's a ton of downside for Encarnacion, though, depending on where he goes.
That we would have to see where he goes, definitely. And he won't be. I doubt Bautista will be with Toronto. I don't know about Encarnacion. What do you guys think?
Well, just to clarify, where he goes geographically, not where he goes in drafts.
Yes, right. Which team?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, because he's a free agent. And I missed your question because I was trying to get that comment.
I don't think Bautista will be back with the Blue Jays, but I don't know about Encarnacion.
I don't know that either will. Supposedly the Red Sox are going to make a big push for Edwin Encarnacion with David Ortiz retiring.
Which would be great.
Yeah, it'd be great. Sure. That would be a great place for him to end up.
Please, no.
but the Blue Jays might get left out in the cold here.
Yeah, it's pretty cold up there. More busts in a second. Let's go to the news and notes. Kyle Schwarber is on the World Series roster. As I mentioned, he tore his ACL and his LCL in April. He will DH at Cleveland when they're in Cleveland. He will not play the field. So Heath and I both picked the Cubs. I picked them in 5 on the Fantasy Football Today podcast. Heath picked them in 6, right?
Yep.
Scott, what say you?
I'll pick them in 5.
Yeah.
Cubs in 5.
It's amazing how the Indians have been able to get all these leads with these just bad or average starting pitchers.
Well, they haven't stuck with the starting pitchers that long. But Andrew Miller was the ALCS MVP.
I know, but if they don't have a lead, you're not going to go to Andrew Miller in the 6th inning. Now, maybe if it's tied, but if the Cubs have a lead, if the Cubs get to their starting rotation, and I think they could win with Kluber on the mound, but you know, if the Cubs can get a lead, I don't see the Indians jumping ahead after 5 innings, turning it over to the bullpen 4 times and beating the Cubs.
Right, but would you have seen that?
No, but I just
I mean you had the Reds you had the Red Sox winning the World Series. That offense, that was only 3 games
instead. And the Blue Jays, I mean, yeah. They've already done it to 2 offenses. I don't know how, but Give him credit.
Right. I think there's probably a little luck. Great managing by Francona too. Really, technically Andrew Miller isn't his closer, so he isn't totally doing bringing the closer in the fifth, sixth inning, whatever happens to be the highest leverage situation. Although he has done that before with Cody Allen, it's just more often been Miller. So he's really pulling out all the stops here.
There was a quote, I don't remember the name. It was a Giants, it might have been their general manager. It was a front office guy talking after their season ended about their bullpen. And obviously they have to upgrade it. But one thing he said was that guys want to know their role, you know, in the regular season. Guys want to know if they're the eighth inning guy, the ninth inning guy. And I don't think just because Terry Francona is doing what he's doing, and you know, we saw what the Giants did or the Dodgers did with Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw, but first with Kenley Jansen. I don't think we're going to start seeing relievers in the regular season routinely pitching like that, like Andrew Miller has been. I still think we're going to have defined closer roles. This whole trend, maybe we'll see a little bit of it. I think that's going to be an overblown storyline.
I tend to agree with you. 162 games is so long that you kind of have to fall into a routine just to be able to manage it psychologically, both for the player's sake and the manager himself. He just needs to have some decisions that are push button, I feel
right.
like.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's not the ideal, but I think it's human nature.
Heath doesn't like it.
No, I think you guys are right. That this is not going to be a league-wide trend that starts in 2017. But I would expect there be just to be at least a little bit of carryover / copying in the regular season now next year, especially from the managers that have used it and had it prove successful. I think we'll see a little bit more of it.
It's going to be pretty interesting to see what the Indians do next year. I don't know. I might have asked you this on the last podcast. What is Cody Allen under contract? He's not a free agent, is he?
Right. Yeah. They both of them should be back. Both.
Yeah. Woo.
Allen and Miller.
What are they gonna do?
Well, probably
keep it like
about
it is.
What they
right?
did this year. I mean, weren't there times like because we are monitoring Andrew Miller's usage very closely in the days following that trade. And weren't there times we were seeing him come in prior to the eighth inning even?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I don't feel like this is completely, no. like, I think Francona was doing this to some extent during the regular season.
And teams had all, I mean, it was a shift just in the last couple of years that teams started doing this with their setup men.
Yeah.
And using them in the sixth or seventh inning in tight spots. So it's moving that direction. It's just everything in baseball moves at a snail's pace. It's going to take decades of proof for some of these guys to accept it.
You know who's going to move at a snail's pace? Kyle Schwarber. Okay, so what are we doing about Schwarber next year? Where will he be eligible?
I'm still trying to fight for catcher eligibility, but Scott will not agree to it.
Oh, wow.
It's not all my decision.
It is entirely Scott's decision, so let's talk about it, Scott.
I keep pushing for it, and Scott says no. So,
yeah, I don't think we're going to start making special exceptions to the eligibility rules. Yeah, Kyle Schwarber only played outfield during the regular season this year, so that's where he's going to be eligible. Now, if the Cubs still want to use him as a catcher, he'll get his five games and regain eligibility next year. But, I'm glad we get to see a little how they handle him in the World Series. Now, we probably won't see him play a lot, just DH, right? And even then, only against right-handers, I would imagine. So, I think, though, I'm already a little encouraged about his value for next year, just because they value his bat so much that they're willing to push him to this degree without an actual rehab assignment, you know, back sooner from the knee injury than anyone expected. Because they really want that bat in the lineup. And I think that's encouraging heading into next year because before this storyline even began, I was wondering what they're going to do with him and Wilson Contreras and, getting Javier Baez and Ben Zobrist both in the lineup lately. They've been playing Zobrist in left field. Obviously, Jorge Soler is still in the mix. It seemed likely to me that Schwarber wouldn't be an everyday player next year. And as a non-everyday player with only outfield eligibility, at least to start out, I didn't know how valuable that was really going to be. I still think we're talking outside the top 36 outfielders, but it may be in that 40 to 45 range. We can expect Schwarber to be drafted.
Well, what's the argument, Heath, for Schwarber being catcher eligible?
The argument is that he played two games this year. Like, he was catcher eligible in coming into this year. He played in two games and got hurt. If he'd played in zero games and missed the entire season, he would have been catcher eligible this year. So the fact that he played in those two games cost him catcher eligibility.
I'm kind of with Heath, Scott.
I understand the logic behind it, but if you're just having one person sit down and make these subjective rulings on everybody's eligibility, then you open the door to a lot of.
It's not a subjective ruling. How about we have a new rule moving forward? If you play less than 10% of the season, your eligibility from the prior year does not change.
Well, there are plenty of minor league players who play a short amount of time.
Okay, that's fine. Just whatever your eligibility was, your eligibility is if you didn't play 10% of the season.
They planned on using him at catcher last year, didn't they?
Yes.
I think it's easy to make a sweeping statement like that when you haven't actually experienced what the ramifications would be.
What would the ramifications be?
The occasional Kyle Schwarber doesn't have catcher eligibility to start the year.
What's the benefit of it?
What's the benefit of it?
Yes.
I mean, you get where the player's been playing most recently. That's where he's eligible.
But
it was two games.
Bad luck.
It was two games.
But it was two games. They were planning on using him at catcher.
We should not be changing anyone's eligibility based on two games.
We have no idea how much catcher he would have played.
But he would have played enough to qualify.
And if they still want to use him at catcher, he'll be able to regain eligibility there. I don't even know why I'm having to stand here and defend this. It's not even up to me.
Well, it doesn't have to be up to you.
I think it's an interesting conversation. Fantasy sports.
No, it's not. No, it's not Scott's call. I just think it's an interesting.
I don't think subjectivity and with eligibility is a good path to go down. Yeah, but you're applying you're trying to, just for this one example, you want to make this sweeping change across.
It
all
generally takes something happening to show us a flaw in the system.
It's not a flaw. He didn't play catcher this year.
A guy comes in and has a pinch hit at bat, gets hit in the face, and misses the whole season, and all of a sudden, all of his eligibility is gone.
I mean, to be fair, he didn't even play enough to qualify at outfield.
No, if a player plays less than 20 games, he obviously doesn't have to get 20 games anywhere to get the eligibility. That's always been a rule. There are actual rules we follow with eligibility.
Right, I'm just trying
just
to change a rule.
We go along.
I'm just trying to change a rule.
Okay.
Do you think every rule that we have right now will be the same in 20 years? Some rules will get changed.
I don't know that fantasy baseball exists in 20 years.
Oh, Scott, I hope it does.
Well, I hope so too, but I don't know.
What if we're all doing this podcast in 20 years?
Oh, that would be the best thing ever.
You know what? It could be. It could be because podcasting at that point is like the preferred medium. Like, podcasting right now is TV in the 1950s. And podcasting in 20 years is going to be like, you know, TV in the 70s, where radio still exists, but TV's. I think we're onto something. We're going to be huge. We're going to be stars, podcast stars.
Agreed. Nobody even knows what we look like. They only know our voice.
Oh, everything will be on video too. But nobody watches video anymore in 20 years because they're just listening to podcasts. All right. Busts from last year. Let's talk about these guys. Andrew McCutchen, Jose Abreu, Michael Franco, Zach Greinke. Those were the four that Scott gave me. McCutchen, Abreu, Franco, and Greinke. Let's start with Mr. Andrew McCutchen, who was, in the last 3 years, a top six outfielder in 2014, a top seven in points, 14 in Roto in 2015, and outside the top 30 in 2016. What went wrong with Andrew McCutchen, Scott?
I don't know. I still don't know.
No.
I think we spent all year trying to figure out what exactly was wrong with him. I was encouraged by the way he finished the season. His last, I'll date it back to August 12th, so that's his last 50 games of the year. He looked much more like Andrew McCutchen. He hit 289 with 9 home runs in about a third of a season's time, remember. and an 869 OPS. And even the strikeout to walk ratio was about 1-1 during that stretch. So whatever was going on with him in terms of plate discipline, which was definitely out of line, that seemed to get back on track too. That's maybe the most encouraging number of all during that stretch. But here's where it gets tricky. He, again, from August 12th, last 50 games, he didn't measure as high among outfielders as you might expect, even with those numbers. Again, because the landscape was so different. It was normal Andrew McCutchen, but how good was normal Andrew McCutchen among last year's outfielders? Not enough that you'd be drafting. Like, if you could assume those last 50 games for a full season, he wouldn't be drafted first, second, probably third rounds. You're talking maybe a fourth round player.
Here's my problem, because I like what you're doing. I'm having trouble processing it, though, with Davis and McCutchen, and if they are who they were, the landscape has changed, so they aren't as good anymore. If the landscape changed, it would have the same effect on them as everyone else. So if they just had a down year, if they are who they were in 2014, their numbers will be better than 2014 because the landscape has changed. They're not just going to be who they were. Because if they are who they were in 2014 with everybody else better, then they're worse than they were. They're not performing at the same level.
Well, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, if you just want to make the argument Chris Davis wasn't right last year, so assuming he's right, he'll be better along with everyone else in baseball.
I'm more making that about McCutchen.
Well, I don't think you can really apply it to McCutchen, because McCutchen, we have an actual sample of actual numbers where we say, okay, he turned things around.
But I don't really think he did,
and it's
though.
Still not good enough.
I don't think he really turned things around. I mean, I think
it was
like
better.
A 2-week stretch where he was really good. You could really look at most people's seasons and find these samples, but look at how he finished. I mean, he was bad for, I don't know, the last half month of the season, the last two weeks, I'd say. Terrible. I'm looking at like 10 games where he has 5 hits, 6 hits. So, I don't know. It was a mini hot streak. And as a McCutchen owner, I was so frustrated. And get him back in your lineup. Things are looking better. And I mean, if anything, he drew some walks, but that doesn't really help you in a standard
right.
roto league.
Right. I mean, the plate discipline was back in line even during the 2-week stretch you talked about. It was so bad before then.
Right.
That I can't help but think that was, you know, at least a partial turnaround.
I probably get accused of getting off in the weeds too much with some of these numbers and some of these players. And I've tried to do that with McCutchen. And I think I'm going to have to lean on a non-analytical approach of he got off to a really bad start in a very bad funk. And he just started pressing is what it looks like to me. And then he ran into a few and got hot for a little bit. But I think his whole approach got screwed up. He did not produce hard contact at the same rate that he has throughout his career. He did not have the same plate discipline. He popped the ball up twice as often as he ever has. I think he just started pressing and wanted so badly to carry the team like he always had, and just he couldn't find it last year.
Yeah,
and that's not that analytical, but that's what it looks like.
He's not old. He's 30.
No, he's fine.
Is he a bounce back candidate? But to Scott's point, he's not a 30 home run hitter, and he doesn't steal bases anymore. So it's pretty hard to see him getting back to being a player even worthy of a second round pick.
Here, yeah. my problem with the he's not a 30 home run hitter is anybody else that was a mid 20s home run hitter and had hit 30 before was basically a 30 home run hitter last year.
Yeah,
like the shift in baseball was. What, a 10% increase in home runs?
That's a good point. Yeah.
It wasn't evenly distributed, though. There were a lot of non-home run hitters who suddenly became 20 homer, like a disproportionate number.
Right, okay.
Was added. Like, we didn't see, like, the year everyone compares it to is 2000. We weren't seeing a bunch of guys hit 50 home runs last year. It was mostly more focused in the middle, the home run gains. But, You did mention it, Adam, the stolen base decline. Last 4 years, he's gone from 27 to 18 to 11 to 6. And that was something we were worried about even going into this year.
Right.
I think I called him. I had him in the first round, but I said it was kind of a legacy pick, and I'm worried about the decline at stolen bases, and it continued to decline. He was actually unsuccessful more often than he was successful. So I think stolen bases are out the window for McCutcheon. So best case scenario, I'm thinking 290-ish hitter, 25 home runs. Still good enough to start, but not somebody who you're going to build your team around.
I don't see any reason to think he can't be a 300 hitter again. I think he can approach... 25 home runs is probably fair. But a 90-90 guy with 300 average and 25 home runs, that'd be better. That's he's not a first-round pick. I'm not trying to argue that. I think he's definitely a bounce-back candidate. We've both got him ranked like one.
All right, so I was going to ask you, would you rather have Kyle Schwarber or Andrew McCutcheon next year? I'm guessing the answer is McCutcheon.
Yeah.
Yep.
Would you rather have Mark Trumbo or Andrew McCutcheon next year?
McCutcheon for sure.
Yeah, McCutcheon.
Nelson Cruz or Andrew McCutcheon?
I think this is where the paths diverge. I will say McCutcheon.
I'll say Cruz here, but he's an ageist.
Right. Yeah, and he's like 117. I mean, I've been an ageist for 3 years, and he's just keeps getting older.
I'm a big believer in the DH, keeping people young, if you know what I mean. So as long as he's going to DH... I don't know. I'm gonna give him the David Ortiz treatment and just think he's gonna, you know, be good forever until he's playing on stumps, according to some about David Ortiz. All right, two outfield busts for Heath: Giancarlo Stanton, Bryce Harper, first round picks that were really bad this year. And who are you more confident in bouncing back next year, Heath?
Harper. I think there's a little bit. He didn't quite have the patience to deal with the Bonds treatment, because that's what he was. I mean, early in the year, it's easy to forget with how bad his year was, how amazing he started 2016.
Mm-hmm.
He got off to an incredible start, and then he started getting the Bonds treatment, and I don't think he was patient enough to handle it.
It's also worth noting that he did finish as the number 10 outfielder in points leagues, where you get a point for a walk, lose half a point for a strikeout. And he, however, was number 20 in standard Roto. Now, that ranking that I always give Roto is batting average, home runs, RBIs, runs, and steals. It is not on base percentage. So he would have been even higher in an OBP league.
Right. Yeah, he was great in the For the People League.
Oh, yeah. 108 walks this year for Harper. But you know what I found interesting when I looked in his baseball reference page? You look at walk rate. Well, no, not walk rate. I'm sorry. You look at two things: home run to fly ball rate and the batting average being 243. And I think like the ground ball to fly ball ratio, that kind of stuff, those peripherals looked a lot like every year other than 2015.
We were foolish to rank him as the number one overall player. We should not have put him ahead of Mike Trout.
But is he capable of having another 2015 where he was the number one hitter, or at least number one outfielder, 330 with 42 home runs and 99 RBIs, 118 runs, just a monster year? Is he capable of doing that, or were those first 3 years more of an indicator of Bryce Harper?
I think he's capable.
He's definitely
capable. I don't even know that I'd go as far as to say we were foolish for ranking him ahead of Trout going into this year. I think it was a little reckless. that's more why, I rank him 10th overall now, but I do think he's capable of being the best player in fantasy still. It's just how much are you going to wager on that? And there are nine players who I wouldn't be willing to give up for that possibility. And that's usually with the way I approach the early rounds. You just don't want to mess that pick up more than anything else. And, feel like I did kind of stray from that. And you were saying it at the time, Adam, kind of strayed from it by ranking Harper ahead of Trout going into this year.
I just found it amazing that the four analysts on this show, the two of you, Al and Chris, all had Bryce Harper 1 and Trout 2. And I don't think that was the industry standard. And I certainly
it was just us.
Yeah, it wasn't the listeners either. Because I did the polls on Twitter. Not that that's all of our listeners, But Trout won preseason, and you guys, I just found it amazing that the Harper camp
unanimity was kind of odd, because it's not like you know, it's not like we talked it all out and agreed this is what we're going to do.
I don't know who did it first. That's who we should blame.
Probably me.
Scott's fault.
Or it may have been Al. I mean, we were the two working on baseball.
It'd be easy to blame Al, right?
Yeah, let's just blame Al.
probably Al.
All right, how about Stanton, guys? I said Scott did his top 24 for next year a couple of weeks ago, and I would lean Stanton maybe early third round. Because I don't believe that he's as bad as he was. Well, nobody believes he's as bad as he was in that really bad stretch last year. I don't think he's going to be necessarily as good as he was, you know, with 27 home runs in 74 games in 2015. That was ridiculous. But I think he's fine. I think if he stays healthy, which he won't, but in the third round, if I get 130 games out of Giancarlo Stanton, I feel like I'll be happy.
I agree completely with that. The only problem is it's been once in the last 4 or 5 years that we've got 130 games out of him.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. It's a big problem.
Okay. So,
and really, the numbers weren't that. I mean, the BABIP was out of line, which caused his average to be low, and the ISO was down from last year, but not hugely from his career.
I'm blaming Bonds.
Yeah, I think it's definitely Bonds' fault.
Well, I mean, there may have been a case of him getting off to a bad start and pressing, kind of like you were talking about with McCutcheon. I mean, so much pressure on him to perform when he actually is healthy. In terms of head-to-head points per game, he was worse than Matt Holliday this year. So, I mean, the production was definitely not what we're used to seeing from Stanton.
Yeah.
I would guess it'll be better, but it's kind of what I was saying with Harper. I mean, it's weighing risk versus reward, and there are plenty of other good outfielders in the third round. That's probably where Nelson Cruz is going. That's probably where J.D. Martinez is going. Andrew McCutcheon will probably be in that third, fourth round range. I have Stanton as my 13th outfielder. You know, that's still giving him a lot of credit for his track record without completely selling out to the idea that 2015 was just a fluke season. I can live with that, especially knowing the injury risk.
All right, so let's do Jose Abreu, 15th outfielder in points, number 19 in Roto last year. Abreu is going to be 30 years old in January. He batted .293 with 25 home runs, and he drove in 100. In fact, I was pretty surprised that he was top, you know, he was 15th in points and 19th in Roto with 25 home runs, a respectable batting average, mm-hmm. and 100 RBIs.
Yeah, but I mean, the raw numbers don't look bad.
67 runs, though. That's bad. But you know what I did? I'll tell you what I did.
What did
he scored
you
67 runs. In his first 2 years, he scored 80 and 88. So I gave him 84 runs right in the middle. You give Abreu 84 runs, 17 more fantasy points. He moves up one spot. He'd be the 14th first baseman.
Ooh.
So isn't that weird?
He's another player that didn't get the magic juice to affect the change in baseball.
Right. No, he didn't. That's that's good. I mean, I assume you didn't mean that literally.
No.
But here's what I noticed about Abreu, because during his downstretch, I know we talked at some point about how a lot of the ratios looked exactly the same in terms of how many fly balls he was hitting, how hard he was hitting the ball, strikeout to walk ratio. It all looked normal. He just didn't have as many home runs.
Yeah.
There was a lot of correction in the second half. 319, 14 home runs, 898 OPS. And yet, even just second half alone, he was the eighth best first baseman in points leagues, actually ninth in Roto. So still not somebody who lived up to your investment, even during his best stretch of the season, the stretch that corrected his numbers. I feel like if he's really an elite first baseman, his best stretch of the season has to be better than that. I don't think he measures up anymore.
I just had the greatest idea for a column idea that you should write.
Okay.
Left Behind, the Lost Stars of Fantasy Baseball. You just write about all these guys that you just don't think got the magic juju.
You know, I think Heath, you know, being a little sarcastic.
No, I'm not at all. I think it would be a good piece.
Guys, but I understand what Scott's saying.
Not,
look,
not that much different than what they were in the past, but because everybody else got better, they're just not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Abreu, 25 home runs. How many first basemen do you think hit more home runs than Jose Abreu? First base eligible players in fantasy.
Hmm.
Just home runs, just first base, the top of my head, I will guess 14.
I was going to guess 17.
20 first basemen hit more than 25 home runs. Again, that's not true first baseman. That's first base eligible players.
Uh-huh.
But that's cray-cray.
That's probably that needs to be at worst Abreu's second best category to batting average, and may need to be his best. So
100 RBI 3 years in a row. That's probably one of his best. And
yeah, those.
I do think the runs comment you made, Adam, is a fair one. Like, we can't hold that against him. It's not like he's likely to score 67 runs being on base that often again.
But like I said, it would have only moved him up to 14th in points. I don't know where it would have from 15th. I don't know where it would have moved him up in Roto. You can't calculate that.
Right.
Not easily, anyway.
Right. Not easily. I would never even try. Let's go to Dallas Keuchel. I don't think we talked about him in our starting pitcher podcast last week. This is a bust for Heath. Heath gave us Stanton, Harper, Chris Davis, and Keuchel. What do you want to say about Dallas Keuchel?
I think he's a bounce back candidate in that he shouldn't be as bad as he was last year, but I don't believe the potential. Like, you asked if Harper could repeat 2015. I don't think Dallas Keuchel can.
Okay.
And I like the strikeout rate is just so far out of line with everything he did in the minors and what he's done in the majors. You have to assume he's going to strike out 7.5 batters per nine. And it's become, because of this change in baseball with more offense, it's become more difficult to survive as a pitcher that doesn't strike out that many hitters.
Yeah.
It really has. Like, strikeouts went way up, and that was the only thing that controlled the offensive explosion. Because balls that were hit ended up turning into runs at a much greater rate.
I mean, I don't disagree with your assessment of Keuchel, that 2015 is going to go down as his best season.
And I think 2014 was the second best.
The larger point you were making, I mean, we saw an abnormal... I feel like this is something I probably need to research more, but I feel like it was an abnormally high number of what we think of as non-strikeout pitchers have great years. Well, obviously, a lot of the pitchers we liked as aces coming into the year, largely because of their strikeout rate, didn't measure up.
There was some of that. I agree. I think as a whole, though, if you look at the trends and see that offense is up that much and strikeouts are up that much, that tells you that balls in play are worse for pitchers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the thing with Keuchel is, even though he had a great ground ball to fly ball ratio last year, and in Baseball Reference, which includes line drives, it's 1.34 ground balls to fly balls. And that's excellent, but not really for him. I mean, in 2014, it was 1.81. In 2015, it was 1.63. So while he still did get a lot of ground balls, he did not get as many ground balls per fly ball / line drive last year.
What I saw from Keuchel in his last 10 starts, 3.49 ERA, and two of those 10 were awful. So it was kind of an inflated 3.49. Seemed like he might have been turning things around a little. Then the shoulder inflammation hit. So I like him as a bounce-back candidate. I think I have him ranked higher than Heath does.
Yeah, but, not my top whatever we ranked.
But I don't really see him being in the Cy Young conversation.
Last bust is Michael Franco, Philly's third baseman, who just could not drive in runs because, man, the Phillies were so bad. Franco drove in 67 runs. He scored 67 runs. I think that's what it was. He couldn't score runs. He drove in 88, which is respectable. 255, 25 home runs, 88 RBIs, 67 runs for Franco. And he hit 280 in 2015 in about half a season with 14 home runs. So, yeah, I mean, how does Franco measure up with the other third baseman in a pretty interesting position next year?
I don't think he does. He is going to need to take a big step forward in terms of development for him to be the guy we drafted him to be this year, because he was only 18th at third base in points leagues. He was, you know, he ranked behind, you know, across all positions, he ranked behind guys like Jonathan Scope, Kendry Morales, Martin Prado, Nick Markakis. He was not good.
All right, before you go further,
uh-huh.
Can we just chalk it up to the sophomore slump?
Well, maybe maybe to a degree, but you mentioned the supporting cast aspect of this. Well, a couple things. First, that I don't feel like that's getting better. Not next year, anyway, supporting cast. So Michael Franco is trying to go it alone here in the Phillies lineup. And B, he is a bad on base guy, which makes it kind of exacerbates the lack of supporting cast problem he's not even going. He reached base 30% of the time last year, 30.6.
He's a bad on base guy if he has a 270 BABIP.
Well, no, he'll be bad even if he hits a normal batting average. It won't be as
like
bad.
340 is not a bad on base. It's above league average, and that's what he did over half a season in 2015.
This is Michael Franco, by the way. We're talking
right,
about
like, yeah. I was very disappointed. He was a bust. I agree with that completely. I disagree with the idea that he has to take a major leap forward, because it's the same argument we made for him in 2016. If Michael Franco puts together a full season like the half season and he did in 2015, that's not a major step. It's something he's already done for a half a year.
Except now third base is a lot deeper around him.
Right, but still, if he hits 280 with 28 home runs, 90 runs, and 100 RBI, he's going to be in the conversation of a borderline top 12 third baseman.
That sophomore slump thing, it happens. I don't really know how to characterize Anthony Rizzo's career. He only had 128 at-bats in 2011, and he, you know, hit 141. He did nothing. 2012, 285 with 15 home runs in 87 games. And then you're probably thinking, all right, 2013 is going to be his year. Rizzo bats 233 with a 419 slugging percentage, so there was some power there, but 23 home runs. But he batted 233 in 160 games. He was terrible. 2014, you're probably a little bit down on him. He bounces back with a 286 batting average and 32 home runs, and he's been a 30 home run guy 3 years straight. So I'm certainly not saying that Scott is giving up on Michael Franco, but I hesitate to downgrade a guy that much if he has a bad sophomore year. I mean, with him, certainly with Carlos Correa, I expect Correa to produce more like he did as a rookie than he did last year, and it wouldn't surprise me if Franco did the same thing.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either, but this is kind of a conjunction issue. Not just him, but the supporting cast and his particular flaws within that supporting cast. It was apparent to me very early in 2016. Oh no, this is not going to go the way we hoped it would. He's just not enough of an on-base guy to live with, to survive with so little going on around him.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's a 270 BABIP guy forever, and then, yeah, the on-base is going to be terrible. But I think he's probably more of a league average on-base guy. I don't think the supporting cast was good in 2015, and he was on 100 RBI pace. So I've downgraded him because I thought he had the ability to be a top six or seven third baseman coming into last year. I still kind of think he has that talent, but I couldn't rank him anywhere close to that right now because of what he saw us last year. The difference is going to be, like, the league made the adjustment to him in some way last year, I think. Like, he was a little bit worse. He struck out a little more. He walked a little bit less. He didn't hit for the same power. Does he make adjustments? But I don't see any reason that he can't do what he did over his rookie season for half a year over a full season. And then he's a borderline startable option.
Cool. Let's finish off the show with some emails here. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This email is from Dan in New Haven. Dan says, I can use his last name, and I've used it before. He's a great name. His name is Dan Valen, as in Eddie Dan Valen, as from the band Dan Valen. You know? Okay. Here's the question. You're Edwin and Jose, and sorry for not choosing a third if Heath is around. Heath, you want to be Josh, Russell? Who do you want to be from the Blue Jays?
No, thanks.
Okay. Long-time Braves fan here. I know we've been talking a lot about pitchers the last two podcasts, but I need help with four potentially questionable pitchers. So this is a keeper league. 13-team, 6x6 roto keeper league. Oh, and how about this? Because of Adam's genius 2 years ago, I'm already keeping the magical Manny Machado for $19. All right. So who would you take two of these four pitchers? A $14 Corey Kluber for one more year. A $9 Verlander for 3 more years, $6 Hendricks for 3 years, $6 Yu Darvish for 3 years. P.S. Just kidding about the Braves. I'm a Phillies fan. Braves stink. Sorry, Scott.
Okay.
I like Dan.
So only two Braves fans today. I'll refresh everybody's memory.
Yeah.
All of you listeners. $14 for Kluber, $9 for Verlander, $6 for Hendricks, and $6 for Darvish. The difference is Verlander, Hendricks, and Darvish can be kept for 3 years, Kluber for only one.
I'm thinking Verlander and Darvish.
Yeah, I'm probably going Kluber, Verlander, and trying to win it this year. I'll have another keeper I can keep next year. I mean, you had this many options where you're trying to narrow them down. The extra 2 years, especially for a guy like you, Darvish, I don't know what that's even worth. I'll go Kluber.
Well, Darvish is still young. Extra 2 years. He's going, I feel like he's going to be in the ace conversation longer than the other two will.
I think, okay. I would be more concerned about his health than anyone else's, but that's a possibility.
I mean, I do expect there will be an innings limit for Darvish this year, would be my guess. So in the short term, yeah, I mean, I don't rank him on the same level as Kluber and Verlander, but on a start by start basis, I don't really think he's in a different category.
I might even go. Let's go Kluber and you. Then it's easier.
Okay. Here's Luke. Luke has an auction question. One of each position, three outfielders, one utility, five starting pitchers, and two relievers. So like one catcher, first base, second base, third base, shortstop, three outfielders, and two relief spots. Last year, you guys had 20 to 25 aces ranked and said try to get two or three of them. With a $260 budget, low on aces, you know what? Maybe I'll keep this for next one. It's a good question, Luke. Let's do this as email of the day next week so we can talk about auction strategy for starting pitchers. So we'll finish with this from Andrew. Dear Tillman, Kazmir, and Cliff Slocum. That's very funny.
Yeah, Chris Scott and Heath.
Yeah, I like that.
Heathcliff Slocum. Yeah, I gotcha.
I remember that Scott was very high on Alex Wood before he got hurt. Do you think that Alex Wood could still be a late round steal? Alex Wood is back. That's what Scott White said.
Yeah.
I think he was right.
What could have been, right? I mean, since then, the Dodgers have really gone to work on their starting rotation. I don't know that they'll have room for him. I don't know if coming off the injury he had, they'll be particularly motivated to stretch him out as a starter again. So there are a lot of unanswered questions here. If it becomes clear in spring training that he's just one of their starting five, then yeah, I'll like him as a late round sleeper. But I'm guessing that won't be the case.
Cool. Well, thank you, guys. This was just so much fun. I just want to tell you, I don't know why the NBA decided to start its season on Game 1 of the World Series.
They're trolling.
I'm mad. It pisses me off.
Why?
Because I want to watch the friggin' Knicks game tonight, but I also want to watch the World Series.
Yeah, you're not going to be happy watching the Knicks game. Just watch the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true, but I love me the Knicks, man. I got to watch the Knicks.
Oh, I think the Knicks will be fun to watch sometimes this year, but not in this game against Cleveland.
They're not going to be five people at the game. They're all going to be at the Indians game or watching the Indians game.
You know, in these modern times, there are ways you can watch both.
I can. I wonder if is the baseball game streamed anywhere, like the FS Go app or something?
I'm sure people have streams.
That's where I had been watching the playoffs at this point. I assume World Series is on the actual Fox, you know, not Fox Sports 1, but Fox. And
yeah.
I would still guess that's probably available via the app. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Fiance's going to be pumped tonight, right? It's bad enough I bludgeoned her with football. Now she's got baseball and basketball going at the same time. Oh, God. That poor girl. All right, guys. Thank you very much. For Heath and Scott, I'm Adam. See you later.
See ya.